17. The Land of Oz. We stepped into the greenhouse, a dense couple of acres of grain and vegetables and dwarf fruit trees. The air was humid and smelled of dirt and blossoms. A woman in shorts and a t-shirt, cut off under her breasts, motioned for us to take off our helmets. She introduced herself as Emily.
"I keep track of the airlock in suits," she said. "Follow me and we'll get you square."
Feeling overdressed, we clanked down a metal spiral stair to a room full of shelves and boxes, the walls unpainted rock. One block of metal shelves was obviously for our crew, names written on bright new tape under shelves that held folded Mars suits and the Fiam suitcases.
"Just come on through to the mess hall after you're dressed," she said. "Place isn't big enough to get lost. Not yet."
They planned to more than double the underground living area while we were here. I helped Mother out of her suit, and she helped me. I needed a shower and some clean clothes. My jumpsuit was wrinkled and damp with old sweat. Fear sweat from the landing. I didn't smell like a petunia myself. But we were all in the same boat. Paul and the two other men in Mars suits were rattling down the stairs as we headed for the mess hall. The top half of the corridor was smooth plastic that radiated uniform dim light, like the tubes that had linked the space elevator to the Hilton and the John Carter. The bottom half was numbered storage drawers. I knew what to expect of the mess hall and the other rooms. The colony was a series of inflated half-cylinders inside a large irregular tunnel, a natural pipe through an ancient lava flow. Someday, the whole thing would be closed off and filled with air like the part we'd just left, but for the time being, everyone lived and worked in the reinforced balloons. We walked through a medical facility, bigger than anything we'd seen since the Hilton. No people, just a kind of medicated smell. 40 or 50 feet wide, it all seemed pretty huge after living in a spaceship. I don't suppose it would be that imposing if you went there directly from a town or a city on Earth. The murmur of voices was pretty loud before we got to the mess hall. It sounded like a cocktail party, though the only thing to drink was water, and you don't dare spill a drop. The mess hall was big enough for about 2 dozen people to eat at once, and now there were 100 or so, sitting on the tables as well as the chairs, milling around saying hello. We 33 were the first new faces they'd seen in a year and a half. About one Martian year. One A-R-E, pronounced Airy. I'd better start thinking that way. The room had two large false windows, like the ones on the ship, looking out onto the desert. I assumed they were real time. Nothing was moving, but then all the multicellular life on the planet was presumably right here. You could see our lander sitting at the end of a pair of mile-long plowed grooves. I wondered whether Paul had cut it too close, stopping a couple of 100 feet away. He'd said the landing was mostly automatic, but I didn't see him let go of the joystick. I saw Oz immediately and threaded my way over to him. We shook hands and then hugged. He was a little bit shorter than me, which was a surprise. He held me by both shoulders and looked at me with a bright smile, and then looked around the room.
"It's pretty strange, isn't it? All these people."
75 new faces after seeing the same 3 dozen for months. "They look like a bunch of Martians." He laughed.
"Was the landing rough?"
"Pretty awful, but Paul seemed in control."
"He was my pilot, too. Good old Crash Collins."
"Crash?"
"Ask him about it someday."
An Asian woman a little taller than Oz came over, and he put his arm around her waist.
"Josie, this is Carmen."
We shook hands.
"I've seen your picture," she said.
"Josie Tang, Oz's lover.
Welcome to our humble planet.
I tapped my foot on the metal plate. Nice to have real gravity.
The same no matter where you go,
Oz said.
I'll give you a tour after the formalities.
When Paul and the other two came into the room, an older woman started tapping on a glass with a spoon. Like many of them, men and women, she was wearing a belted robe made of some filmy material. She was pale and bony.
Welcome to Mars. Of course, I've spoken with most of you. I'm Dargo Solingen, current General Administrator. The first couple of souls,
Martian days,
you are here. Just settle in and get used to your new home. Explore and ask questions. We've assigned temporary living and working spaces to everyone. A compromise between the wish list you sent a couple of weeks ago and reality.
She shrugged.
It will be a little tight until the new modules are in place. We will start on that as soon as the ship is unloaded.
She almost smiled, though it looked like she didn't have much practice with it.
It is strange to see children. This will be an interesting social experiment.
One you don't quite approve of?
Dr. Jefferson said.
You probably know that I don't, but I was not consulted.
Dr. Solingen, a woman behind her said in a tone of warning.
I guess none of you were, he said. It was an Earth decision, the corporation.
That's right, Solingen said. This is an outpost, not a colony. They don't have families on Moonbase or even Antarctica.
Oz cleared his throat.
We were polled. Most of us were very much in favor.
And most of them did call it the colony rather than Mars Base 1. The woman who had cautioned Solingen continued.
100% of the permanent party, those of us who are not returning to Earth.
She was either pregnant or the only fat person in the room. Looking more carefully, I saw one other woman who appeared to be pregnant. You'd think that would have been on the news. Maybe it was, and I missed it. Not likely. Mother and I exchanged significant glances. Something was going on. It turned out to be nothing more mysterious than a desire for privacy on the women's part, and everybody's desire to keep Earth out of their hair. When the first child was born, the Earth press would be all over them. Until then, there was no need for anyone to know the blessed event was nigh. So they asked that we not mention the pregnancies when writing or talking to home. Solingen went on to talk about work and living schedules. For those of us in school, study schedules would continue as on the John Carter, and we'd be assigned light duties appropriate to our abilities. Probably fetch and carry or galley slave, as we called kitchen work on ship. Then she introduced each new arrival, stating where they were from, what their specialties were, and lists of honors and awards, all from memory. It was an impressive performance. She even knew about us youngsters. Mike Baker's national, Canadian, spelling bee, Yuri's solo with the St. Petersburg Orchestra, and my swimming medal, an extremely useful skill on this planet. The way she looked at me left no doubt who it was who forbade Paul from being with me. I would try to stay out of her way. People got together with friends or co-workers. Almost everybody had been working along with one of the Martian teams en route, and moved toward the workstations and labs to talk. Oz and Josie took me and Card for a guided tour. We'd already walked through the hospital, an aid station about 3 meters wide by 10 long. It was connected to the changing room by an automated airlock. If there was an accident with the main airlock, it would seal off the whole colony. That was the standard size for most of the buildings, 3 by 10 meters, but most of them were divided into smaller sections. The mess hall where we all met was about two-thirds that size. 200 square meters for 100 not too crowded people. The rest of the space a very compressed kitchen and pantry. About half of the overall floor space was cabins, more like walk-in closets, where people slept. Most of them were 2 meters long by a meter wide, 3 meters high, with upper and lower bunks for two people who better be compatible. The bunks folded up to the wall, and desks for working or reading folded down. 4 of the cabins were a half meter longer, for 7 footers. The walls were colorful, in sometimes odd combinations. Each unit, 12 to 32 people, voted on a weekly color scheme. The walls glowed a comforting warm beige or cool blue most places, but there were bright yellows and moody purples and a Halloween orange. We walked down the main corridor, about a meter wide, past 6 rows of cabins. The last bunch of 16 had temporary partitions and improvised bunks, where most of us newcomer earthlings will sleep. In normal times, that would be the recreation area, so people had real motivation to set up the new living areas we'd brought. Then, there were 3 large work areas, which, besides labs and computer stations, contained separate rooms for administration, power regulation, and environmental control, water, air, and heat. Finally, there was an airlock leading to the biosciences laboratory, where there were strict controls. We tried to be careful not to contaminate the Martian environment, and conversely, if there were dormant alien microorganisms in the rock and soil specimens, we didn't want to let even one of them into our air and water. The consensus was that it was unlikely Martian microbes could affect us, but who wants to put it to the test? The whole area was kept at a slightly lower air pressure than the rest of the colony, discouraging leaks. Here I was on a brand new world, making history, and my phone beeped to remind me that I had a history paper due tomorrow. I thumbed that it would be a day late, 10% grade reduction. Oz invited Card and me back to the cabin he shared with Josie. The 4 of us could sit comfortably on the lower bunk. He showed me how the desk worked, folding down the retractable arms, revealing a small high-definition screen. The work surface was flat, but had a virtual keyboard. The arms were a clever parallelogram construction that let you position the desk at various heights. The walls were covered with pictures, only 2 his own work. From art history class, I recognized Rembrandt, Pollock, and Wyeth paintings. The others were by Scandinavian artists I'd never heard of. A public address system called all new colonists to dinner. It was fantastic after months of ship rations. Salad with fresh greens and tomatoes, hot cornbread, fried tilapia. After the meal, we were invited to come up and look at the farm. Those tilapia weren't the happiest-looking fish I'd ever seen, crowded into a small tank of murky water with agricultural waste, their food, floating on top. Most of the crops had supplemental lights over their beds, Martian sunlight being pretty thin. It was easy to recognize stands of corn and apple trees, tomato plants, and beds of lettuce and cabbage. I didn't know what rice looked like, but it was probably different on Earth anyhow. Not enough water here for paddies. Kai Mei laughed when she saw it. We went back down to get our assigned sleeping areas straight and get on the shower roster. There were 2 showers, and you could sign up for a 20-minute interval for the female one. The men only had 15 minutes. There were more of them. There was a complicated list of instructions in the small dressing room. We were allowed 160 minutes per month, 2 showers a week. The 20 shower minutes you had included 10 for undressing and dressing. The 10 minutes you were actually in the shower included only 5 minutes of actual running water. Get wet, then soap and shampoo, and then try to rinse off. All of us newbies were penciled in for showers if we wanted them. If! I had one scheduled for 17:20 and waited outside the door for 10 minutes. Mrs. Washington came out, radiantly clean, and I slipped in to undress and wait for Kai Mei to finish, behind the shower curtain. The dressing room was the same size as the shower, about a meter square, and unsurprisingly smelled like a girl's locker room on Earth. I chatted with Kaimei through the curtain when her water stopped and she switched to the dryer. No towels, just a hot air machine. She came out looking all new and shiny, and I moved my sweaty corpus in to be sluiced. It was an odd sensation. The water that sprayed from the handheld nozzle was warm enough, but the rest of your body gets really cold, the water on your skin evaporating fast in the thin air. The amber liquid that served as both soap and shampoo was watery and weak, probably formulated more for its recycling efficiency than its cleaning power. But I did get pretty clean, much cleaner than I'd ever felt on the ship. I used the last 30 seconds of rinse time, letting the warm water roll down my tired back. There was a fixed dryer about 4 feet off the ground, somewhat aimable to get your back and butt dry, and a handheld thing like a powerful hairdryer for the rest. The heat was welcome, and I felt pretty wonderful when I pulled the curtain. Dargo Solingen stood there naked, bony and parchment pale. She marched by me without a word. I managed, "Hello?" I dressed quickly and looked at the roster. There had been someone else's name after mine, someone unfamiliar, but now it was Dargo Solingen. I suppose she could butt in line any time she wanted, pulling rank. But it was an odd coincidence. Did she want to see the sexy body that seduced her pilot? As if you would have to be a great beauty to appeal to a guy who's been celibate for 3 months. I think nominally female would fill the bill.